This is Unfiltered, episode 61 for July 31st, 2013.
But it's not up to Bradley Manning to make the decision to disclose this. You know, maybe you disagree about that, Glenn, but I admire the Foreign Service a great deal. And, you know, I trust their judgment about what's a secret a lot more than I do Bradley Manning.
Right. And look, Jeff, you can make that argument in every leak case. I mean, people back in the 1960s said Daniel Ellsberg was a traitor. Who was Daniel Ellsberg to decide what should be leaked to the American public? I trust U.S. generals way more than some Daniel Ellsberg who I never voted for. And yet what Daniel Ellsberg did was expose systematic lies on the part of the U.S. government. In the Bush years, people said whoever told Dana Priest at the Washington Post that the Bush administration had secret CIA prisons, or whoever told the New York Times that the Bush administration was spying without warrants, what right did they have to disclose secrets? This is how journalism, investigative journalism works, Jeff, is that people inside the government with a conscience come forward when they find out things that their government is doing that are wrong, and they disclose it to the world through media outlets and journalism. If you think that's criminal, you're essentially calling for the end of investigative journalism. That is what investigative journalism is about. No.
Coming up on this week's episode of Unfiltered, a diagram that literally puts the NSA's worldwide spying system on the map has been exposed in a newly released presentation, giving us a better picture of the surveillance system that is said to hold a three-day buffer of the internet. We'll dig deep into the details and explain how it works and what you need to know. Plus, an update on Bradley Manning, the Obama administration pledges not to torture Snowden, and the U.S. continues to dance around that big problem in Egypt. Then it's your feedback, our follow-up, and much, much more on this week's episode of Unfiltered. And welcome to Unfilter, episode 61 of Jupiter Broadcasting's weekly show that's distracting you from all of that TV you shouldn't be watching. My name is Chris, and joining me every single week is the always excellent Mr. Chase.
Hey, Chris. Hey, everybody out there. It's very good to be here. It's a beautiful summer day. No.
Actually, it's really stormy outside.
No, it's not. Coming to you live from the Jupiter Broadcasting Late Breaking Weather Center. And, you know, I gotta say
we're on lightning watch.
We're on...
We totally are. Like, if the show goes off the air all of a sudden, it's because we probably got hit by a
stinger. We need a stinger, man. Lightning Watch 2013.
I just figured. Anytime we see the lightning hit, we'll do like a late breaking Fox News.
Yeah.
So this is a special episode this week. So last week we were recording the show while my wife was going into labor,
and,
which brought an edge.
And wait. I know that was like one. What do they call it? A cliffhanger, if you will, because we don't know. Chris?
No, she had the baby.
Oh, yes. Yes.
No, we went off air, and then that process continued all night long.
All night long.
But tonight's a special show because we have a very special guest in studio.
Yes, we do. We have Edward. No. This is the only time he's going to say anything. This is my dad, Larry. Say hi to everybody in the whole world.
Hello, Larry.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. He'll be joining us. And
Thank you.
Larry is taking the blue pill today, I think, right?
He's taking the Angry Birds pill, actually.
Yeah, hopefully the Angry Birds will keep him
satisfied. He's playing Angry Birds Space for the first time ever, and I think you're hooked on it.
Well, Larry, you've joined us for a big show this week. Yes. Tons of stuff going on in the world, as we talked about in the intro there. And I felt like it would be appropriate, as a lot of things are going on, especially with the NSA and Snowden and the new revelations. Huge revelations came out today.
Did you hear he was acquitted?
Yeah. Oh, Manning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about that.
Yeah,
but
I know.
First, I feel like we should talk about the people who are actually doing something about their situation, and that would be Egypt. And in case you didn't hear, there's a showdown a brewing.
There is increasing concern tonight that the crisis in Egypt may be heading out of control. Protests over the military takeover have been growing. Over the weekend, there was a mass killing of demonstrators, and a new showdown may be brewing now.
So we have this new showdown that's potentially brewing between the now new military, which is AKA the military, or the new government, which is AKA the military, and the Muslim Brotherhood. And Candy, our gal, Candy,
course, Chase's girlfriend, right? Candy?
No.
No.
Oh. It's not Candy.
I thought you had a thing for
it. It's Aaron.
Oh.
It's Chicken.
I get Aaron mixed up with Candy all the time.
How can you get her mixed up with Candy? Are you serious, man?
I don't at all. I mean, the other one,
close number two is that one chick from Russia Today.
Oh, yeah.
That had the intro clip last week.
Yeah, you're talking about, what's her name?
Yeah, I know.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah, Abby Martin.
Abby, yes.
Candy sat down with Dianne Feinstein. Feinstein. And, of course, Dianne is the Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman. Mike Rogers is the House. And Feinstein had a bunch of really interesting things to say in this interview with Candy. And Feinstein's in a pretty good position to know about these kinds of things. She is sitting on that Intelligence Committee. She's been following a lot of this. As the Chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, she's purview to a lot of the things that are going on in Egypt. And so Candy asked her a few questions about that.
More than 70 demonstrators have been killed and more than 1,000 injured this weekend in Egypt, all of it during clashes between the military-installed government and its supporters versus backers of ousted President Mohamed Morsi. In a written statement, Secretary of State John Kerry said, "The United States urges an independent and impartial inquiry into the events of the last day and calls on all of Egypt's leaders across the political spectrum to act immediately to help their country take a step back from the brink." Joining me now is California Senator Dianne Feinstein. Thank you for joining us this morning, Senator.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
I just get the feeling that the U.S., despite these strong military contacts we hear about all the time between Egypt's military and the U.S. military, doesn't have a lot of sway in Egypt.
I feel like this question, and I'll back it up so we can hear it again. I feel like this question is Candy setting up Feinstein with a softball, essentially allowing Feinstein to say, look, we would love to make changes here, but we don't have the power. We're just the little United States, after all.
Before you play, one thing that people need to realize here is when you're watching the news and you see a politician sit down with a reporter and you may be feeling that they're just sitting down for the very first time.
Oh, right.
And they're asking questions that they've never heard.
Yeah.
Like they're going to be shocked with a question.
Right. No, they've all been pre-supplied.
No, this has been pre-screened, pre-interviewed. Yeah. They won't even usually appear to go on these news
unless
shows.
Unless they see them, or they know the content
of the questions that are going to be thrown.
It is part of the condition before they'll go
on. You guys need to realize that.
Especially when you're higher up, like Feinstein is.
Yeah.
Between Egypt's military and the U.S. military doesn't have a lot of sway in Egypt when you watch what's going on.
Well, that may well be true, and I think this is a real point of definition of what kind of Egypt is going to come out of this. And for the first time, I am very concerned.
So Dianne Feinstein is very concerned about the type of Egypt that we might have. Now, what's going on now is there is a president and a vice president that have been appointed. So Morsi is being held. He's been put aside.
Yep.
We'll get to that in a minute. In fact, actually, I have a real quick clip about that. Until I found this clip, we weren't even sure what was going on with Morsi. We were under the impression that he had been taken by the military and put somewhere safe, but what was his condition? Apparently, he's alive, talking, and even watching TV.
In Egypt, the European Union's top diplomat has met with ousted President Mohamed Morsi. Morsi hasn't been seen or heard in public since he was thrown out of office July 3rd. Catherine Ashton won't say where she met Morsi last night, but she does say he has access to television and newspapers. Ashton is in Egypt to try and resolve the country's bloody political crisis.
Now listen. Now Candy brings the question back to the new leaders in Egypt,
Right. Listen
to how Feinstein kind of jumps around and dances around the answer.
I'm surprised that the military would urge people to go to the streets. They had to have known if they do that, the other side is going to respond, and it became a kind of catalyst for violence.
So she's putting a little bit of the onus, not so much on the Muslim Brotherhood here for the protests and the violence, but for the military sort of inviting their side to come out in the streets and defend their position, which she says, by the very nature of doing so, forced the Muslim Brotherhood to come out and defend their position.
So I don't think we know what kind of Egypt is going to emerge. I think it's very important for this new president and vice president to exert their authority now. It will show whether a democracy in terms of civilian control of the military can effectively govern that country. And so the next few months, I think, are going to be real eye-openers for the world.
The next few months are going to be real eye-openers. Now, Candy says, well, wait a minute here. You're talking about these people like they're democratically elected officials. These were put here by the military.
Yeah.
This is a coup. This is a coup. And she tries to point out, Candy does, and I think rightfully so, tries to point out how the U.S. appears to be struggling to go out of their way not to call what's happened in Egypt a military coup.
Oh, well, we talked about it on the show.
When there is a coup of a democratically elected leader, the U.S. Generally can stops aid. But here's what the spokesperson for the Secretary of State said this week.
So this is the spokesperson at the Secretary of State from the State Department doing their daily briefing. Listen to the answer when they keep pressing her on if this is a coup.
The law does not require us to make a formal determination. That is a review that we have undergone as to whether a coup took place, and it is not in our national interest to make such a determination.
So if it made the determination it was a coup, we'd have to stop aid, and therefore they're just not going to make a determination because anybody plainly looking at this would say it was a coup.
Right? So our position is in order to make sure that
we're not going to make a determination.
We're not going to look. We're not even looking at this situation.
Wait. If you see something, say something, right? So I need to see, Chris, I don't think there was a coup here.
Because you haven't seen any proof
from
the State Department.
I didn't see it. We can't say anything. Right. Can't do it.
Now listen to Feinstein try to answer that question, which is a great question from Candy.
I think the ball is in Egypt's court, and
right.
It's in the court of the President Mansour and the Vice President El Baradei, and they have to step up and they have to take over.
Right. Both failing were installed by the military.
Failing that, I think you know what military will do now.
Right. I mean, both those men that you mentioned who are now
she spoke
running,
nothingness right there. She said nothing.
Now listen to this nothingness.
Egypt were installed by the military.
Well, that's one thing, but acting is another thing, and they have
to
be.
You want them to take charge of the
that's
military
correct.
Now? Do you think they can?
Well, we'll see. If they don't, they can't. If they do, they can.
Wow! Wait! Whoa! Can you play the line?
Yeah,
because I really need to take notes here.
All right, let me cue this back up here. Here we go.
Hold on.
If they don't,
okay.
Okay, you ready? If they don't,
okay. If
they
don't,
can't.
Okay, they can't.
Wait. If they don't, they can't.
Right.
Okay. If they do, they can.
That's incredible. And if they do,
they can. So okay. So hold on. Okay. That's... Did you get all that? Just so great.
Wait.
I want to play it one more time.
If they don't, they can't. If they do, they can't.
Guess what? Your tax dollars at work, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, you know what? You know what? Ms. Chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, I am glad you are keeping us safe. She is by the ripe age of 80, by the way.
Wait. Stop.
Yeah.
She's 80?
She is 80 years old.
What's the mandatory retirement age?
Death.
Hold. 65. So if if you're typically a government official or even if you're in the military. If you're in the military,
that's just for us pedestrians.
They force you out. They say you're done.
A civvies, Chase.
But
that's
she's
civvies.
80 years old,
yep.
And she is speaking some of the best truth I've ever heard in my life.
Hey, if they can, they can, and if they can't,
they can't.
Well, they can't.
Yeah.
Right.
That is. Wow. You know what? I those are some words to live. I should tweet that.
What's actually funny is
I need to tweet that.
I mean, you know, if we just were to break this down too, and I just want to play this last piece one more time here. Let me bring this back up again.
I think the ball is in Egypt's court.
Okay, so even that doesn't really make any sense. Of course the ball is in Egypt's court, but is it in the military's court? Is it in the Muslim Brotherhood's court? Is it in the people's court?
And it's in the court of the President Mansour and...
Okay, so the president, who was assigned by the military, not democratically elected.
And the vice president, El Baradei.
Okay, so even though we're talking about democracy all the time, we're actually totally cool with a military coup where they come in and then install their own leaders. Okay.
They have to step up and they have to take over.
And so what the problem is not that the military has done a coup and then replaced the democratically elected president with their own hand-selected president. The problem is that they are not stepping up. Even though they've only been in power for a week, they're not stepping up and taking charge.
Right.
Both
failing
were installed
that,
by the military.
Failing that. I think you know what military will do now.
Right. I mean, both those men that you mentioned who are now running Egypt were installed by the military.
And so you can tell that Diana is going nowhere with this. Candy actually hands her the answer.
Well, that's one thing, but actually...
Now listen.
Thing is another thing, and they have to be.
You want them
to
take charge of the
military.
That's
correct.
Now.
Diane didn't say that.
No.
Candy said that, and then Diane just said that's correct because Diane didn't know where the hell to go, right? And then
because remember she's 80,
and then she wraps it up with this beauty.
Do you think they can?
Well, we'll see. If they don't, they can't. If they do, they can.
I mean, it is amazing. And we'll get to, in a little bit, Mike Rogers, who was also out hitting the Sunday scene. It's interesting that both the chairman of the intelligence committees from the House and the Senate are out on Sunday. But the situation in Egypt continues to be crazy. And I've decided that maybe Unfilter's role in covering this will be in covering the U.S.'s response to it. Because I think we're in a good position to sort of watch what our policymakers are saying and sort of be the watchdogs of that. And I feel like that's sort of our strength for this particular conflict in Egypt. So as America continues to flop around on their response to this and struggle to actually call it what it is, a coup, I think Unfilter will continue to document that.
Yeah, and just to let everybody know in the beautiful Unfilter audience, I just tweeted live during the show, if you don't, you can't. If you do, you can. So those are more truer words.
Wisdom in 140 characters, Chase.
I mean, if there isn't something that's more suitable to be tweeted,
beautiful.
It's that. Thank you. You're welcome.
Not as beautiful as a series of tubes, but damn.
That is
close.
Really good. That
All right. Really well, good. Hell of a show to get into for the rest of the show here. And I am very excited to cover some of this because it gives us a lot more insight into what's been going on. But very, very briefly, Chase,
yes,
I would
sir.
Like to take a moment to thank our Unfiltered supporters. Now, Chase, did you know
The
Unfiltered show features no advertisers?
Wait, let me get this right.
Did you know we don't stop and read ads? We don't try to pitch you a product. We don't try to make sure that...
I was going to read this box here.
Oh, yeah? Did you get a product that you thought maybe we should get sponsored?
Well, availability and performance of certain features, services, and applications are device and network dependent.
That was private. I asked you not to talk about that.
I'm talking about it.
I said I don't want... That's a bedroom conversation. That was a bedroom conversation.
It's in a small Plan B box. That's all I can say.
So, all right. You know what? And here's a little... maybe a peek into sort of why we do things the way we
do. If you play the Anderson Cooper clip,
no.
I am leaving.
Can I, though? Because your dad's never heard it. Can I just play it for your dad real quick?
He can't hear it. Can he
hear
it?
Oh, my gosh. It's Anderson Cooper, everybody.
Oh, my God.
All right. So, big news, Chase. And this is why Unfiltered doesn't have to play the numbers games, because we're listener supported. And what that means is the only nut we got to cover is enough of you supporters. We don't have to be millions of views. We don't have to be thousands of downloads. So we're not perpetually chasing the dumbest common denominator. That's not our game. But listen to this. Here's a great example. ABC News dethrones NBC in crucial ratings race, according to the headline on the New York Times. In a twist, the television industry gawkers immediately honed in on. The victory was shared by Miss Sawyer and one of her regular fill-ins, David Muir. That's because Mr. Muir substituted for Miss Sawyer three nights last week. The same three nights it turned out that ABC beat NBC in the all-importance rating demographic. Mr. Williams prevailed barely on the two nights that Miss Sawyer was at work. And the big hubbub is that maybe Diane is on the way out. And Chase, I referred to you.
I'm not shocked here.
To a clip from our 2012 election coverage.
Okay, I want to have a... can we have our music?
Because
this is another big one here. Minnesota. We're ready to project Minnesota right now. And again, another state, the Romney campaign had raised a question whether it was in play. Well, tonight we know that President Barack Obama has won Minnesota.
Listen how drunk she was. President Barack Obama.
President Barack Obama.
And so now they're talking about big shakeups. George Stephanopoulos might be taking over, or David Muir might be taking over for Diane. You know, all this, all they're doing right now, they're not actually focusing on the content.
Yeah, no, it's not about content.
It's not about content.
No,
it's about making a product that they can sell to advertisers.
Because remember, it's all about the ratings. It's all about the numbers game.
Now,
I mean, I worked in that game for 10 years. It's definitely about that.
I'm going to be honest. We didn't do great because we lost a couple of subscribers. We picked up 4 this week, but we were holding steady at 142 Unfiltered supporters. Now, we're trying to get to 333. That way we can cover one day.
Just
one day of
just
production.
One
day, Chase.
One.
That's all I'm asking for. So if you want to help support the show, keep this type of content that is funded by the people who are consuming it. Therefore, we're only answering to you. We're offering you something unique here. You're taking the pill from the Matrix, and we're waking you up, and we're providing you a service. We are the show that confirms to you that you are not a crazy son of a bitch. The shit that really is going on, that shit really is hitting the fan, and we're talking about it here on this show. This is the show that's talking about it. If you want the show to keep talking about it, please help us continue on becoming an Unfiltered supporter. Go over to jupiterbroadcasting.com, click on any episode of Unfiltered, and in the show notes, you'll find a button where you can subscribe for $5 a month. Once you subscribe, you'll get the Unfiltered newsletter after every single episode of the Unfiltered show. In that newsletter is linked an Unfiltered supporter show that gives you all of the pre-show, all of the post-show. Right now for you Unfiltered supporters, your show is rocking in at 1 hour and 14 minutes already.
Yeah. I mean, the great thing, too, is, you know, we love your feedback. We take it all the time. We actually had Jonathan H. write in, Chris.
Oh, yeah? What did Jonathan say?
One of our newer supporters.
Now, is this from last week?
No, this is
Check the date. Are you sure?
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. So, basically...
I'm so sleepy. I can't keep it straight.
No, it's okay. That's why I'm here to pick you up. So...
Thanks, buddy.
You're welcome, man.
You're the wing beneath my wings.
And there's a lot of love happening right now. All right, Jonathan H. writes in and says, "Hello, my friend. Hello, everybody.
Hello,
my a friend turned me onto Unfiltered a few days ago.
Was his name Barry Satoro?
No. I've listened to the two most recent episodes. I just wanted to let you know I joined Reddit.
Oh, nice.
And subscribed to the subreddit.
Hey.
And I became one of the $5 a month of supporters. Very nice. Your show is outstanding. It's just the kind of thing I've been looking for. Thank you." Jonathan H. P.S. I'm a different Jonathan H. than the one announced on that last week's episode that made me laugh at the coincidence. Lulz.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice. Well, thank you for becoming a supporter, Jonathan.
Yeah, man.
And thank you to all 142 of our Unfiltered supporters. And please consider becoming an Unfiltered supporter if you felt like you have gotten some value from this show and with the tubes.
Because Chris, if you don't, you can't. But if you do, you can.
That is the best reason I've ever heard to contribute to the Unfiltered show. That right there, because if you can, you can. And if you don't, you can't. And you won't. I think I got to clear out the tube.
Reset, Chase. Reset.
Oh, God.
All right, Chase. Guess what it's time for?
It's now time for Ask the Chat Room. We're going to ask a question to the lovely chat room. And if you know the answer, you will get accolades beyond all compare. Mr. Chris Fisher.
I'm going to provide the answer this week because nobody else is going to guess it.
What's the question?
The question was, who, Chase, who? Well, maybe, you know what? Let's see if the chat room gets it. You ready? You ready?
Well, wait. What if my dad could get this?
All right, let's see. All right, you ready?
All right.
Chase's dad, Larry.
Yeah.
Who was acquitted of aiding the enemy this week?
Have you been following the news this week?
Who was acquitted?
He has no idea.
Who was... All right, chat room, we'll take it to the chat room. Who was acquitted?
Who was acquitted?
Of aiding...
Aiding the enemy. So it's not a three-letter agency. Sorry, chat room.
Sorry, chat room.
So what person? All right.
You ready?
I think we have an answer. Go ahead, pull it. Coming with the answer of Bradley Manning, it's Turn Page Wash Hands. Is that correct?
Oh, I think Turn Page Wash Hands got it. Yes, in fact,
nice job.
Bradley Manning. That is correct, Chase.
Very good.
All right, let me take us out of quiz mode. So, yeah, Bradley Manning this week. Now, this is only one of the many charges that he is facing, but this is the most serious. Aiding the enemy was the real big one. This is the
one that could give him the death penalty.
Yeah. A military judge on Tuesday found that U.S. soldier Bradley Manning not guilty of aiding the enemy, the most serious charge he faced for handing over the documents to WikiLeaks, but he still faces a long jail term after being found guilty on 19 other accounts.
It was the charge that could have put the 25-year-old away for life without parole, the charge that would label him a traitor who knowingly aided al-Qaeda. But today, while Manning stood at attention in the courtroom, the judge declared him not guilty of that most serious charge.
On the biggest charge in the case, the government ends up leaving the courtroom with its tail between its legs.
Prosecutors had presented evidence that battlefield reports from Iraq and Afghanistan that Manning gave to WikiLeaks were found on Osama bin Laden's computer after the raid on his compound. But that wasn't enough to prove he aided the enemy. Manning was...
I love this, by the way. You can claim anything was found on Osama bin Laden's computer. Not saying that it wasn't. I don't mean to be that guy. But all I'm pointing out is that if you keep everything a secret about that event, then you can claim anything you want. You can claim you found porn. You can claim you found Bradley Manning's personal emails. You can claim you found emails from Edward Snowden. You could claim 20 years from now that there was emails from Chris Fisher on that computer. You can claim any damn thing you want.
Convicted of 20 of the 22 major charges against him, including espionage, theft, and computer fraud. The young private, a high school graduate, unable to hold a job, joined the Army in 2007, only to be made an intelligence analyst with a top secret clearance. He was in Baghdad when he downloaded 700,000 classified documents and videos that shocked the world.
Hey-o.
Manning saying he had wanted to show the true cost of war. He did so with this video, where U.S. soldiers mistake a cameraman for the enemy.
This is nice. Good shooting.
And fire on a van with two little children inside.
Oh, it's their fault for bringing their kids to a battle.
That's right.
But the
this is the problem, is I've talked to guys in the military who I have a lot of respect for.
Right.
And I've been friends with, worked with them, and the reality is this, in order to kill people from an airplane or a drone, mm-hmm. you have to detach yourself.
Yeah.
You psychologically can't do it. And so you enter this sort of robot mode where they're just objects. So when they're killing children, a rational person doesn't say, good shot, shouldn't have brought the kids, right? That's not what a normal person says.
Yeah, but you try to make it something artificially fake.
Right.
When it, you know it's not, but right. you try to make it is to justify right. it in your mind
and,
to do it.
And I have gotten messages from UAV operators who say this keeps them up at night. This troubles them after a while. At first it doesn't, and then after a while it troubles them.
Yeah.
So it's disgusting. And when Bradley Manning comes out and he says he's trying to show the true cost of war, he's talking about this human cost.
Former director of the CIA, Michael Hayden, says Manning greatly harmed national security.
Michael Hayden, being the NSA director who was keeping watch when warrantless wiretapping was put in effect by the Bush administration, enabled it and took actions outside the purview of the administration, Congress, and the Justice Department. Yes, that Michael Hayden, who now apparently for the last month has been the go-to on all things national security. Every week we've had a clip that stars frickin' Michael Hayden, and he's talking about how awful somebody is when he's the moron that turned on the wiretapping service in the first place. But let's get his great opinion.
This is the most significant leak of classified information in the history of the Republic. So he put real people at real risk.
WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange today called Manning a hero, as he has said of the NSA leaker Edward Snowden. The sentencing phase starts tomorrow for Manning, and
today.
While it is doubtful he will be sentenced to the 136 years the charges call for, it is likely he will spend a big chunk of his life in jail, George.
Yeah, 136 years is still what he could be facing. 136 years. Now, depending on where you caught the coverage, you kind of might have been walking away with the opinion that Bradley Manning is essentially getting off scot-free, because some headlines are he's acquitted of aiding the enemy. And
that's all they say, and right. that's all they say.
Yeah, but that's not the case. He's not getting away with anything.
Well, Bradley Manning's point was, you ought to know what your government's doing. And I guess we do now, and I guess he'll go away now.
I guess that remains to be seen. I believe he's being sentenced tomorrow, but it's important to understand that though this may have been a victory for the defense, and I think in many ways it was, he's not getting away with anything. I mean, he did get convicted on 21 separate counts of things ranging from espionage to orders violations and actually leaking classified information. So he is getting punished. He in many instances, pled guilty and accepted responsibility for breaking those laws. It's just the aiding the enemy is really the only one that the government didn't get him on.
What was your take on the fact that they didn't?
Well, I mean, like everyone else, we're kind of left speculating because the trier of fact in this case, unlike most cases, was the judge. So the judge actually ruled on the law and also was the finder of guilt or not guilt in this case, as opposed to a jury. And so
judge,
all
jury.
We can do is
yeah.
really speculate. And I think that in this case, for this law, that this charge really never comes around. I mean, 1917 is really the last time someone was convicted for something like this.
1917.
Right. Well, that's
wow.
when part of the Espionage Act, which is the
right.
reason this actually became illegal. And that was essentially a case where somebody was disclosing information because they wanted Americans to be killed. They wanted the enemy to have this information. And in this case, I think the government just was not able to prove that PFC Manning intentionally disclosed this to the enemy.
They would actually have had to have been able to prove that his intent was to aid the enemy. That's the key thing about the aid the enemy thing there, is that you've actually got to prove that he was intending to leak that onto the internet for Al-Qaeda to get at some point
right.
on their own volition, and that's just a really hard case to make.
How do you prove that?
How do you prove that?
It's not going to happen.
One of the interesting sort of side stories that I thought I'd go collect that hasn't been really talked about, and it's funny how when there's major cases going on like this, there's still sometimes funny elements that just completely go uncovered until now. one of Manning's biggest supporters had this truck, like a box truck, like a moving truck.
Yeah.
With WikiLeaks on the side of it, right?
Yeah, top secret.
And he got, the sentencing started today. Yesterday was the verdict on aiding the enemy. Yesterday, this longtime supporter of Manning, he took it too far and he was kicked out of the courtroom.
One of Bradley Manning's most visible supporters, Clark Steckley, was banned from the trial last Friday after Judge Lynn said someone posted threatening comments online aimed at the prosecution.
So as this interview continues, I want you to keep this in mind because this is RT, so you have to put your critical thinking cap on. He did tweet out a tweet about the prosecution that he knows where they're sleeping, and you know he could come.
So he said that.
Just keep that in mind. I'm going to play the rest of it uninterrupted. In mind that he did make a tweet that was aggressive like that.
All right.
Steckley is a college art instructor from New Jersey and attended the court martial as a sketch artist, arriving each day in a white truck with the words WikiLeaks, top secret mobile information collection unit, painted on the side. Now, a tweet last Thursday night from Steckley's account said, "I don't know how you sleep at night, but I do know where." He released the addresses of the location where the prosecutors could be found. It was removed on Friday. Now, Clark Steckley joins me here in studio to talk about his time at Fort Meade. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
It's good to have you here. Now, Clark, how did you get your hands on the addresses of the prosecution?
Oh, I can't reveal my sources, but it was through hearsay. Mm-hmm. And I had never confirmed that information until I was banned from the courtroom and the base as well. But the information I know went through several people and eventually ended up in my lap. And it was not information that I was seeking. Mm-hmm. It was not information I went and confirmed. I've never have seen the prosecution outside of the courtroom. Mm-hmm. I also have never been to the hotel where I believe they were staying. I tweeted it on Thursday night. I came to the court on Friday, and I spent half the day sitting in the jury box drawing the proceedings. Halfway through the day, military MPs took me out and said that I was banned. I appealed the decision with a letter to Judge Lynn. She forwarded that to the base commander, and he refused to let me back on base. I can tell you this, that the originator of this information was Major Ashton Fine, the lead prosecutor. Through communication, he let strangers know where he was staying and that he was the lead prosecutor in this very big and important case. What comes to mind is why is the prosecution in this case staying in a hotel off base? I think that's absurd.
That is kind of odd when you think about the base has living facilities on it, right?
Yeah,
why is he staying off base?
Yeah.
That is kind of a little odd, maybe a little telling.
It doesn't matter if you're a supporter of Manning or not. This is not a good protocol for, Ashton Fine essentially created a security breach. Mm. I reported on it. And, and that's essentially kind of what WikiLeaks has done similarly. I will always stand by my sources, but I do know that Ashton was the source originally.
Now, by releasing the address of the location of the prosecution, were you trying to intimidate the prosecution?
No, my intention wasn't to intimidate. I'm a prankster. I'm an artist, an activist.
Yeah.
And
are you buying this? I mean, what do you think?
Some of it, yes. Some
yeah,
of it,
right?
No.
Some of it sounds like he's kind of making up
some
good
of it he's trying
story.
To cover. Yeah,
exactly.
Of course. Yeah, yeah.
That's what I thought. Although I did think it was just kind of an interesting little twist. I'll have a link in the show notes if you guys want to watch the whole story. It's a rather, I don't know, kind of just a very serious situation it's fun to sometimes find a little humor.
Yeah.
All right. Can we shift gears to the NSA?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Another three-letter agency.
Yeah. So
some new stuff revealed about them.
KeyScore, or X-KeyScore, depending on how you want to talk about it, was just revealed by Greenwald today. As we're recording this, X-KeyScore provides the technical capability, if not the legal authority, to target U.S. persons for extensive electronic surveillance without a warrant provided by, and also they can provide some identifying information such as their email, IP address, anything else that might be known to the analyst. They plug that in the database, and it retrieves results. And this is funny because Clapper was at like a graduation ceremony or something. It was a very official ceremony. He was wearing robes. And Clapper says, head of the intelligence director, says, gosh, Guys, you know, this debate we're having, man, this is so good. This is a conversation, man. We just need to have this conversation real hard. We all need to talk about this real bad. But hey, could we just, you know, keep it out of the limelight completely?
The recent NSA leaks drama crystallizes some conflicting demands on us as intel professionals.
Now remember, this is the man that lied to Congress saying we were not monitoring American citizens.
Not knowingly.
A need to safeguard our citizens' lives, a duty to share intelligence information, a responsibility to protect sensitive sources and methods, and an imperative to protect American civil liberties and privacy. And we must synchronize, meld all of these competing forces simultaneously. And we should preferably do it out of the limelight.
Out of the limelight. I just thought that was an interesting little piece.
We should do it in secret.
We should we'll play that. Right. That's exactly, I mean, if you break down his words, that's what he's saying.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be discussing it with the people. Now, Ron Wyden is the senator who has been at the front of this. He was the one that back in 2011 came out and said, hey, guys, we really have a problem here. This is something we need to worry about. He was the one that asked Clapper, is the NSA monitoring American citizens? And he said no. So Ron Wyden has been at the forefront of this for at least a couple of years. And he recently came out this weekend and said, what we're being told is still just the half of it.
When General Clapper, the head of the intelligence agency, we had a big development last Friday when General Clapper, the head of the intelligence agencies, admitted that the community had violated these court orders on bulk phone record collection. And I'll tell your viewers that those violations are significantly more troubling than the government has stated.
So Wyden's saying the violations are much more significant than had been stated by the government. And that was met by the same level of what I was wondering. Is it rhetoric? Are we done? Because remember I had said, Snowden is in Russia. We will not get any other big revelations from him. I am still technically correct. However, information that he gave to Greenwald last month, Greenwald has been working on and has just released today.
Yeah.
And here is Greenwald on ABC this Sunday sort of alluding to what was about to drop today.
The way that I know exactly what analysts have the capability to do when spying on Americans is that the story I've been working on for the last month that we're publishing this week very clearly sets forth what these programs are that NSA analysts, low-level ones, not just ones who work for the NSA, but private contractors like Mr. Snowden, are able to do. The NSA has trillions of telephone calls and emails in their databases that they've collected over the last several years. And what these programs are very simple screens, like the ones that supermarket clerks or shipping and receiving clerks use, where all an analyst has to do is enter an email address or an IP address, and it does two things. It searches that database and lets them listen to the calls or read the emails of everything that the NSA has stored or look at the browsing histories or Google search terms that you've entered, and it also alerts them to any further activity that people connected to that email address or that IP address have due in the future. And it's all done with no need to go to a court, with no need to even get supervisor approval from on the part of the analyst. There are legal constraints for how you can spy on Americans. You can't target them without going to the FISA court, but these systems allow analysts to listen to whatever emails they want, whatever telephone calls, browsing history, Microsoft Word documents. It's an incredibly powerful and invasive tool, exactly of the type that Mr. Snowden described. And NSA officials are going to be testifying before the Senate on Wednesday, and I defy them to deny that these programs work exactly as I just said.
That testimony was canceled today by scheduling conflicts with President Obama meeting with Democrats.
You know, it's funny, Chris, that they have easy, like almost a Google search, if you will, where they can type in whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they probably have Facebook blocked at work, though, right?
Right, it's like,
you can't go on Facebook. And you can't have Twitter.
And it's funny you say that. Military computers that go through their network actually have like search terms blocked for Snowden. They can't search for Snowden. So Keyscore, it has an X in front of it, but it's just called Keystore.
Is it a lowercase X or an uppercase? Is this Web 2.0?
No, it's uppercase. It's not as hip, I think, when you got two uppercase letters next to each other.
Yeah.
This was a presentation that Greenwald got his hands on from Snowden. The presentation came from 2008. It was training materials for X Keyscore, a program that details how analysts can use it and other systems to mine enormous agency database to develop intelligence data from the web. Now, I want to go super deep.
Uh-oh.
Is it okay if we go super deep? Like, I'm talking Steve Gibson deep.
Oh, well, you know, we love Steve Gibson on this show.
In our first NSA wiretapping and warrantless surveillance show that we did about 6 weeks ago, we played the Gibson theory, where Gibson theorized that
the prism was just a split.
Literal
of,
prism.
Yeah.
Everything that's come out since then, which I completely got on board with. And I think one of the reasons, and I don't, maybe I've said this in the show, maybe I haven't, but people that watch TechSnap know this, that I actually have a background in network penetration. I was paid for it by a bank, and then I went in and did it after that bank. I went and did it professionally and actually I took training on it and charged lots and lots of money to penetrate people's networks. And one of the things I was able to do using software, and I've even demonstrated this software in some shows before, is I can actually take network packet captures and I can reassemble that traffic inside different viewers, right? So I can take a web page, I can capture all the traffic for that web page, and I can actually reassemble that web page just by monitoring the network traffic. That's what's going on here. I want to deep dive into KeyScore with Gibson. He covered it today on his Security Now podcast that aired earlier in the day. And one of the elements that he goes into is what's come out of Greenwald's leaks today. And are you looking at these slides? Are these not incredible?
This is incredible stuff. I'm showing to everybody on the enhanced
good,
feed.
Good. Keep showing them because Gibson's going to go into this. Ugh. It comes out. They have a 3-day buffer of the entire internet. Everything. They store everything that happens online. Everything you do. Everything you do. They store. Doesn't matter if you're a U.S. citizen. Doesn't matter if you're Canadian. Doesn't matter who you are.
What
everything
can
you do? They store it for 3 days and then they can cherry pick the metadata from this 3-day buffer and store it indefinitely. And this is a bit of a long clip, but I know a lot of you guys out there are technical and you want to be able to explain to what's going on to people. This clip, I from a technical standpoint, as somebody who has built systems similar to this on a much smaller scale, it completely checks out. I completely back what Gibson says here, and I want to play this because he deep dives it.
What we have now, as of this morning, is a knowledge of and a on the Guardian's page, there's a link to a scrolling series of slides which are amazing in detail. For example, we now know that it's a massive distributed Linux cluster.
Hey-o!
is the architecture for this. So what Glenn and Snowden disclosed are slides which show that the NSA collects, quote, in their own words, nearly everything a user does on the internet. XKeyScore gives widest reaching, in quotes, collection of online data. NSA analysts require no prior authorization for searches, so they can search anything they want to, anytime they want to. And it sweeps up emails, social media activity, and all browsing history. And the word all is like littered throughout this, and it's a little frightening when you see where they're saying all. So there are presentation training materials that have been posted.
And we will have these this presentation linked in the show notes.
We'll have all the links for you.
Reminder, this is from 2008, and you can draw a couple conclusions based on that. You can draw a conclusion that they've maybe stopped this.
Or it's gotten better.
And even more powerful, right?
Yeah.
Which is likely.
Showing really interesting new detail, which is the reason I'm talking about this. Is not the same old stuff. It's like now we're getting more stuff. For example, they use an acronym DNI, which stands for Digital Network Intelligence. And in the slide, it says DNI Exploitation System / Analytic Framework performs strong, e.g. email, and soft, parens, content selection. Provides real-time target activity, which they refer to as tipping. And then get this, rolling buffer of approximately 3 days of all caps, their emphasis, unfiltered data seen by XKeyScore.
Thanks for mentioning the show, Steve.
So we've never had this before. This is news. This says, now, you know, we've talked a lot about the quantity of information that is passing through these taps, which they have, and as we'll see in a minute here, the architecture as this onion is being peeled continues to substantiate my notion that this is outside of the major cloud service providers.
And I agree with this assumption too. And what this assumption does is it brings into clarity why we have these statements from Google and Microsoft and Apple where they've said, we are not cooperating like this. We don't know what Snowden is talking about. Well, and what's funny about this is Court documents from Yahoo actually revealed that these companies did begin to suspect that the NSA was wiretapping directly outside their connection. And then they, in the case of Yahoo, they tried to fight it. Now, they lost, but they tried to fight it. And right. If you think about it, if you're Google, right, if you're the Google, wiretap compliance officer, and you're getting these requests, and you say, on this request, it says Chase Nunes at this time from this IP address, talk to this IP address over this protocol, and they exchange these documents, we would like your records. How the hell can you say no to that? Everything is laid out. Everything is explained. And if you get this letter as Google, you can't say no to that. It's all right there.
Yeah.
So what are they going to do? Yeah. Of course they're going
to
comply.
Yeah, of
so
course. This sort they have of, to.
This sort of explains that discrepancy between what we've been hearing about this data feed the NSA has versus what the companies have been saying. This explains that discrepancy.
Because none of this would be necessary if it had their cooperation. So this is, you know, tapping Google up just upstream of the data center where the data is raw. And so now what we're seeing is that they're storing everything that goes through, as they refer to it here, all unfiltered data on in a rolling buffer, which, you know, again, that's if they said, Steve, we want you to design something for us, this is the way you do it. This is how a computer science person would tackle the problem of too much data coming through to store it all.
And let me make this clear how right Steve Gibson is here, because I have design systems that are under a high level of attack. Sometimes it's like automated scans. Like there's when you are logging everything that happens to a system and for compliance purposes, some organizations have to log everything or everything they can within reason. When you are logging every port scan, every TCP knock, that log is crazy. So what you do is you have a rolling log. You have a log of that matches the amount of disk capacity that you have, combined with the amount of analytic tools that you have, and you have a rolling log system. This is exactly what you do when you have too much data, but you need to parse out certain elements and analyze analytics. If I was going to build a monitoring system, in fact, no shit, in here in my very own house, when I need to troubleshoot, this is exactly what I do.
Yet, you need to be able to look back in time to perform searches. So the raw data is essentially in a big scrolling buffer where you always have the most recent 3 days. About after 3 days, you start losing it off the end of the buffer as new data comes in because you just run out of your short-term buffer space. So it says stores what they call full take, a full hyphen and take. So that's their jargon for, you know, everything. Full take data at the collection site, which is then indexed by metadata. So
in this slideshow, maybe you can pull this up here, they have a map. And on this map, they have these red dots.
Yeah, I just
these red dots are everywhere that they have.
Oh, I can't show it.
You can't show it because otherwise it'll raise the classification of somebody's computer.
No, I can't show it because there's a really bad, naughty image.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
It's kind of hot, though.
It's hot, but I didn't like it.
Is this all pours in.
Very
they're,
hot. I'm looking at it right
they're
now.
They're pulling metadata from it, which are email, and actually they enumerate those in a minute. Email addresses, phone numbers, names, you know, like sort of formatted keyword searching on the raw data, which is then indexed on the fly, allowing them to then do queries against the metadata and then within this 3-day period to extract from this the buffer of the so-called full take data specifically what they want.
So this system, because it has a 3-day rolling log, and that is due to just the massive amount of volume of the internet, and of course this 3-day log, this 3-day buffer, will increase and decrease as activity on the internet increases and as storage capacity goes up. So it'll always be a game the NSA is playing where they're adding more capacity to process and store. What is happening right now is the NSA is collecting just the metadata elements from this actual data stream. So the to and from of the email headers, maybe the contents if it has an attachment, if it's encrypted, absolutely the contents. And they're able to just pull these metadata aspects because that's all they can store right now. Right? But that is not a legal one part a legal framework, but B,
it's a technical limitation.
Exactly. And you and I know what happens to technical limitations. They become eliminated after a while.
After a while, yep. Eventually, I mean, are we already seeing now like 4 gigabyte consumer hard drives?
Terabyte, yeah.
Terabyte, thank you.
I don't know, maybe if I'm beating this horse too much, but for the people who maybe are not as super technical or haven't done, if you've never installed Wireshark on your computer, you might not know
just
about
take a
this.
Look.
But when you install Wireshark, and this is just an open source application that just monitors your traffic from your network interface, it will tell you this is an NMB packet, this is an SMB packet, this is a broadcast packet. It will identify all of the different packets. You can actually look at the contents of the wire. Just you sitting in your basement can install Wireshark and do this. So Gibson explains, and there are already open source utilities that do this for free today, how you can take these viewers, you can take this dump of the TCP data, you can throw them into these viewers, and you can actually reassemble web sessions, emails, chats.
The stream itself is raw data, but it's only because a web browser expects the format to be something that it's able to show it to you as a web page. Or an SMTP reader, an email system, expects the format to be email that it knows how to show it to you. So it's only a tiny step further to look at the raw data. And any human can do this. We do this all the time when we're doing packet sniffing on the raw wire. You can see like what the headers are and the way it's formatted. It's like, oh, these are email headers. Oh, these are HTTP headers. Oh, these are, you know, news group headers or chat format. So the idea is you start with the raw stream. You apply a simple heuristic recognizer to it to determine what type of stream this is. And then you say, oh, you recognize what it is. And then you apply one of these plugins to format it for full recognition. So they say email addresses indexes every email address seen in a session both by username and domain. Extracted files indexes every file seen in a session both by file name and extension. HTTP parser indexes the client-side HTTP traffic. Phone number indexes every phone number seen in a session. And it says they have in parens, e.g., address book entries or signature block. So, for example, when email goes by with a signature block in it, bang, it locks onto that and indexes phone numbers and the metadata in the signature block. User activity indexes the webmail and chat activity to include username, buddy list, machine-specific cookies, etc.
Now, machine-specific cookies very much so allow you to identify it down to a specific person, which shows that when they're saying, well, we can't identify who it is, that's bullshit.
But, Chris, it doesn't matter because one thing you got to realize is, you know, I have nothing to hide. I'm not doing
don't
anything.
Don't get me started on that again.
I am not doing anything wrong. All I do is I check email, then I send pictures to my grandkids.
And, of course,
I'm not doing anything wrong.
Of course, you know, this kind of monitoring, Chase, has kept us safe. It's stopped terrorist attacks. This has stopped 50 terrorist attacks, Chase.
When I go through the airport and I take off my shoes.
Do you feel safer?
And I take off my jacket and I take my laptop out of the bag. It makes me feel safer knowing that they can go on the internet
and see what you've been doing.
And can see everything I'm looking
think
at.
Think about what we're talking about. As more and more society goes online, we are creating a 3-day time machine. I know that sounds crazy, but maybe after a big event like the Boston frickin' bombings, hello, they could hit the reset button, go back 3 days, and just look at everything that happened in the last 3 days.
But they already knew. But remember, Chris, they already knew, but they couldn't talk about it because if they didn't talk about it, because it didn't happen, because we want to keep this under secrecy.
So now the big talking point now is this is helping save lives. This is preventing those who walk among us from harming us. But remember, I just want to play this clip from you. When they actually tried to get specifics on the surveillance contributions to stopping terrorist attacks, well, you know, it might have played a role in one of them, kind of.
How many cases was Section 215 bulk phone records?
215 is what allows them to get the bulk phone records.
Yeah. Collection critical to preventing a terrorist plot.
Sir, I might answer in open session and then offer to provide follow-up details in a classified session. I would say that the administration has disclosed that there were 54 plots that were disrupted over the life of these two programs.
And Section 215 was critical to preventing...
No, sir.
54
and of those,
plots?
And of those plots, 13 of those had a homeland nexus.
Of the 50-plus plots, 13 of them had a homeland nexus. Love that, right? The nexus edition of Homeland Security.
Yeah, it's nice. It's very, very compact and clean.
Others had essentially plots that would have come to fruition. Europe, Asia, other places around the world.
So were the police of Europe and Asia and other places around the world. Okay.
Yeah. Of the 13...
How many of those 13 were... plots to harm Americans?
Of the 13 that would have had a homeland nexus, 12 of those, 215, made a contribution. The question you've asked, though, is more precise in the sense of, is there a but-for case to be made, that but-for 215, those plots would have been disrupted? That's a very difficult question to answer in so much as that's not necessarily how these programs work. That's actually not how these programs work. What happens is that you essentially have a range of tools at your disposal. One or more of these tools might tip you to a plot. Others of these tools might then give you an exposure as to what the nature of that plot is. And finally, the exercise of multiple instruments of power to include law enforcement power ultimately completes the picture and allows you to interdict that plot.
Is your head spinning yet?
But you know, it's okay, Chris, because I don't have to worry about that because I'm not a terrorist.
So what he's saying is, well, Section 215 hasn't been directly responsible for stopping any terrorism, but it's a part of a concert of tools which we use in order to prevent terrorism. So while, yes, it's a blatant violation of your Fourth Amendment rights, and yes, it involves us spying on every single citizen in the entire world that
we
can manage to.
In the name of terrorism, it's okay.
But you know what? It kind of helps contribute to stopping it, so worth it. Totes.
There is an example amongst those 13 that comes close to it.
Okay, so we've got 54 terrorist attacks, 13 of which were in the U.S., one of which 215 helped with.
A but-for example, and that's the case of Basali Mualim.
I've read that. I've read the material on that. It'd be safe to say the target 54 but-fors.
It is safe to say that, sir.
That's not right.
This capability, the 215 collection of metadata, is focused on the homeland. It's focused on detecting plots that cross the foreign to homeland domain.
But
given
it
that only 13
it
of those plots...
It wasn't a but-for in 54 cases.
It was not, sir.
Thank you.
Given that only 13 of those plots had a homeland nexus, it therefore only had its principal opportunity to make a contribution in 13 or less. In fact, it made a contribution to a plot that was disrupted overseas. I think that shows that this actually is looking not simply at the homeland, but it's looking at the foreign homeland nexus.
And to translate that, what he's saying is, I think this shows that we could manage to come up with a way to justify defense spending to allow us to police the entire world. Because, look, we've just successfully done it in one case.
Well, and I hope we are not mixing up 215. With other sections.
We try hard not to do that, sir. They are distinguished but complementary tools.
Complementary tools, Chase.
Complementary. That means
complementary.
They work so well together, Chris.
Of course.
Yes.
Go look up. We'll have links in the show notes. Actually, you don't have to go.
But
even
you know,
look it up. Go look up X
Keystone.
Sometimes,
I mean, these explanations and their verbiage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to. Was it Adam Curry who might have said that words are important?
Words matter.
Words matter.
Mm-hmm.
They very much matter. And this analyst, you know, the way he's speaking and talking to us and explaining to us how these systems work and how they're complementary.
Right.
You know, most of America, when you know, you and I, we're technical people. We can pick out and bits and pieces of what he's saying, and we can, you know, we can put it together. But I mean, here, I know you're half listening, Poppy. I know you're playing your Angry Birds, but I know you heard what that guy was talking about, the systems and stuff. Did you understand anything he was saying?
No.
Yeah.
No, it's, yeah.
Yeah, he did. I mean,
it's hard to follow completely.
It's really hard to follow. It's hard for even us to follow, and we love this stuff.
Yeah. I think they intentionally use acronyms to confuse the legal system, and they change the definition of what words mean, literally.
Remember, it all went down to what the definition of what is.
Continuing on the NSA thread, Keith Alexander stopped by Black Hat this week and got heckled.
Oops.
Yeah, he was heckled at the conference as he asked for the security community's understanding. The talk began for a plea for the hacker and security researcher community to consider the NSA's role in the wake of a still-unfolding scandal revealed by classified leaks of former Booz Allen contractor Edward Snowden. Alexander went on to say, "Their reputation has been tarnished." He said, speaking of his NSA staff, "but you can help us articulate the facts properly. I will answer every question to the fullest extent possible, and I'll promise you the truth. What I know, what we're doing, and what I cannot tell you because we don't want to jeopardize the future of our defense." The future of our defense, a.k.a. the future of defense spending, a.k.a. how the industrial military complex intends to make their money, is by monitoring all of us forever.
Yep, yep.
They're making their money off of
making
us.
Making tools, making hardware for those tools.
Yeah. We are the inventory in their money-making machine. We are the inventory.
You know, I just had a revelation. You know what? Before the show, we were talking about the Matrix.
Yeah.
And you know, the premise of the Matrix is that humans are the batteries that keep the aliens alive.
Jesus, you're right. We are the batteries that are keeping the military-industrial complex alive. Oh, my God. It's disgusting. Because we've turned on everyone else in the world, right? Yeah. Everyone else who isn't an ally, we're going after. I mean, at a certain point...
Talk about an analogy.
You reach empire saturation.
Yeah.
And you can only dominate every corner of the world until you have to turn in on your own people.
Yep, you're right. You're absolutely right.
And the advantage of it is it's cheaper than building warships and planes, right? It's also in the cyber domain.
Yeah.
You can have people sitting at desks, operating these machines, operating these all this analysis tool. You can build up all these legal frameworks to pay all of these lawyers, all of these judges, all of this legal system, and you can do it all electronically.
Yep, and the best part about it is we're cheap, Chris.
Yeah.
We're cheap. I mean, because, you know, more and more people are coming online on the internet all the time. You know, more kids are having smartphones, you know, have computers in their bedrooms. I mean, hell, your kids are going to grow up with Note 2s and 3s and 4s and 5s.
You're right.
So, you know, it's easy that we are creating an industry for this. Absolutely. And the thing is, most of America, they don't do anything about it because they feel like, you know what? I'm not doing anything bad.
This McCoy guy at the Black Hat conference, he was heckling Alexander saying, "We don't trust you. You're lying." And then other people in the audience started chiming in too.
Yeah.
And afterwards, Ars Technica tracked down McCoy after the talk and said, he asked him, like, "Dude, you are ballsy. What was with your not-so-friendly debate with the general?" And McCoy responds, "His speech was pretty canned. If it's anything you can see on Fox News any day, we're in danger. We have to get rid of your freedom to keep you safe," is essentially what he's telling us. Everyone's thinking this, but no one's saying it. So the public thinks they're alone. 98% of society has issues with what they're doing, but no one is speaking up.
No one is. I mean, we speak up all the time, every single week on this show. And, you know, we know a small fraction of you. I mean, in comparison to the 300 million Americans.
Right. And the people, and the 30% of people who listen outside the country.
Right. You know, we know a small fraction of you support us, and we appreciate it tremendously. But it's the people that we need to talk to outside of the realms of the show.
You know, we got an email about that coming up in a little bit. So the other thing is, when pressed, Keith Alexander was pressed on the issue. It's one of the things that came out with Greenwald's post is that essentially any analyst has the technical ability to query the data about anyone. It's just a series of legal policy frameworks that prevent them from doing so. So if you have a policy at work that says you shouldn't be browsing Facebook, but yet you still browse Facebook, that's the same kind of policy these guys have. They have a policy that says they shouldn't do it, but they have no technical limitation from actually. You can be an analyst. And according to freaking Keith freaking Alexander, the head of the NSA, he attempted to reassure a skeptical audience by saying, "Our people have taken courses and have to pass exams before they have access to this data."
So basically, they have to get through an orientation course.
Yes.
And that's all they have to do.
And this is coming from freaking Keith Alexander.
This is upon the same guiltiness of TSA agents just letting their friends and family through without screening.
Right.
It's the same kind of concept here. It doesn't.
Right. How long until the disenfranchised NSA contractor wants to find out who his ex-wife is screwing? Right? How long till that happens?
It's true, right.
What's going to stop it?
Or let's say you're an analyst, and then all of a sudden you think your wife might be cheating on you.
Why wouldn't you?
So,
there's nothing that prevents you from putting your wife's last name in that search box. Not a single thing prevents you from typing that last name.
Oops,
why the hell wouldn't you do it?
I mistyped.
Why wouldn't you do it?
It was an accident, Chris.
I didn't even realize it was my wife. I thought it was a different Fisher.
Yeah, F-I-S-S-H-E-R. I'm sorry, I misspelled.
Anybody listening who says they wouldn't be able to do that, then you're lying.
I was looking up Jenna Fisher.
Right. Which is, you know, celebrities. Another great example,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, Booz Allen alone. Booz Allen alone, the one company, the one that Edward Snowden worked for, 70,000 contractors working for the NSA people. 70,000 contractors. You're telling me one of those people who isn't even a government employee one day isn't going to get a bug up his butt to search for something on Barack Obama or Joe Biden or his girlfriend or whoever it
is? Chris, you're misspoke here. Not someday. They're doing it now.
Right.
You know they're doing
it now. Of course they are. It's human freaking nature.
Yeah.
They can't help it.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish they weren't.
Yeah.
And so there you go. So that was good times at Black Hat for Keith Alexander. He was noticeably tense on stage, according to the Ars Technica piece. Now, yes. We got to ask ourselves, where in the world? Actually, before we move on, yeah. I don't want to neglect to mention.
Yeah.
There is a rally for privacy on Sunday, August 4th, 1984day.com.
Yeah, that's right. So all over this beautiful country of the United States, there's many different places you can participate: San Diego, Sacramento, Savannah, Georgia, Boston, Massachusetts,
hey-o.
Buffalo, even in our neck of the woods, Chris, Bellingham, Washington.
Oh, that's a nice place for it.
Yeah. Raleigh, North Carolina, St. Louis, Missouri, Washington, D.C., Iowa City, Iowa. And basically what this rally is all about is it just comes back to our Constitution about the Fourth Amendment,
right,
that the rights of the people should be secure in their persons, houses, papers against unreasonable searches and seizures.
It's the beginning of people fighting this. This is the beginning. This is not.
And this is a very clean website. This is very nice looking. It's on the major series. Oh,
I do like the look of it. I do like it. And playing on the. We really are living in 1984.
Yeah.
It's kind of like people don't even realize how close that matches.
You should. You know, I know there's a lot of young guys who like to listen to our show. You might want to put a link in the show notes to the 1984 book. I mean, it's an incredible, incredible book. You can get it on Audible as well.
And no, it's not supposed to be an instruction manual. It just turned out that way.
Yep, yeah. Unfortunately.
So, Chase, Snowden is...
Where in the world is Edward Snowden?
That's nice, man. That's
Thank
nice.
You.
It's
You're
from
welcome.
The soundboard, of course.
Yeah, of course.
The White House has been putting pressure on Russia. In Russia, White House put pressure on you to turn over Snowden.
Now let's talk more about the NSA leaker, an update there. Edward Snowden remained stuck in a Moscow airport this morning, despite Russian media reports saying that he'd been cleared to leave the airport. This is the White House is turning up the heat, demanding the NSA leaker
turning
be turned over
the
to the U.S. immediately to stand
Hot.
Trial. Phil Black is tracking the latest developments from Moscow, and Brianna Keeler is live from the White House this morning to talk more about this. Phil, first, let me just get an update from you. There was some confusion. Did he have the papers to leave the airport? Did he not have the papers? So where does that stand at this moment?
In the end, he didn't get the papers, Kate. His lawyer thought he was going to get them yesterday. The Russian media started reporting that he had received them and he was on his way out of the terminal, but that didn't happen. His lawyer says there's a delay, and he just simply blames that on what he says is the complexity of the case. But there's another issue too, and that is that these decisions in this case are being made from high up within the Russian government, and the Russian government knows that if it lets him out of this airport terminal, then that's going to trigger an angry reaction from the United States.
Absolutely, and that's absolutely right, Phil. And that brings me to you, Brianna, because this latest information, was he going to be able to leave or not? Obviously, sending the White House spinning, making phone calls, trying to do as much as they can to get the outcome that they want. What are you hearing from how the White House is reacting this morning?
That's right. The administration very much reacting here. Kate, Secretary of State John Kerry called his counterpart. This is the highest level of these conversations that we're aware of. He called Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov to really say a couple of things. One, to figure out what the exact status is of Snowden amid these reports that he'll be able to leave the Moscow airport, and also to put pressure on Russia. If he leaves, this is what we were told by the State Department spokesperson. Lavrov was told by Kerry this will be very disappointing to America. And you may obviously think disappointing is a pretty mild word, but that's diplo speak for the U.S. will be really ticked off if this happens. This has gotten way beyond the level the White House and the administration wants. President Obama had to weigh in a couple weeks ago with Putin, and this is something he didn't want to have to do, Kate.
He didn't want to bring himself down to the level of having to talk to another president.
Oh, go figure that one. You know, it's so insulting to go back and
talk to your predecessors.
He is the great Obama, after all.
After all.
Feinstein, back to Feinstein, talking with Candy. She says all of these asylum delays are just sort of a tactics by Putin while he mulls things over. He wants some time to think it through.
The U.S. this week pushing very hard through the Justice Department, saying we're not going to torture him. He won't be subject to the death penalty.
By the way, this is the state America's in now, where we have to release statements saying, no, no, if you give him to us, we won't torture and we won't kill him. Really?
Yeah. No, no, we
no,
won't
really.
Do it.
We
no.
won't. No, no, really. I mean, this
yeah,
is.
Yeah, but remember,
this
we
is
can
the United
always,
States now.
But Chris, yeah, this is the United States. We can definitely believe what our officials say.
It's just sad. Like, we're the nation that has to say, no, 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 we promise not to torture. That remember how that used to be against the law?
Torture
Wait,
him.
Isn't it still?
He won't be subject to the death penalty. You need to hand him over. What are the chances that Russia's going to hand over Edward Snowden?
Well, not. It's hard to tell. I know the president talked to President Putin. I would be very hopeful that President Putin still would decide to turn him over. I suspect this sort of temporary amnesty is or refugee status is to give Russia time to really consider what's in their best interests. And I think if they think about it hard, what Snowden did, it's not in their best interests.
Hey-o.
And Putin knows this. He's run the KGB. He knows what
in
intelligence
there.
Is comprised God. Of. And I think to harbor this man is one of two things. One, we want to get hold of his stuff. Or two, we really want to take the time to figure this out as to whether we should return him to the United States.
All right, so that's Diane Feinstein.
You know, I forgot to mention this earlier. When past couple days, I've been driving my family around the north part of the state. Yeah. They're looking at some properties and stuff, and saw a sign off the side of the road that, you know, with the letters that people can, you know, you can make your own sign, advertising.
Yeah.
One said, Edward Snowden is a hero.
Really?
I saw that, and this was in north part of the
you
state.
You wouldn't expect that in our neck of woods up there.
No, no, yeah. But I was just like, you know what, someone's paying attention. So there's other people.
Maybe they're an Unfiltered listener.
They could be.
So that was Diane Feinstein. Yeah. Of course, she's the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And I think it's noteworthy when the other chairman of an intelligence committee also comes out on the same day and goes on to another network, Mike Rogers, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, assumed office in January 3rd, 2011. Now, you might remember the name Mike Rogers. He's been on our watch list since November 30th of 2011. He showed up on our radar when Congressman Rogers introduced CISPA, the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act. Also, his wife, Christy Clemens Rogers, has previously been president and the CEO of Aegis LLC, a contractor to the United States Department of State for intelligence-based and physical security services. So not that he has any skin in the game. Mike Rogers went on ABC to talk about how, really, there's now blood on Snowden's hands.
And we need to understand this very quickly. He has disclosed programs that make it easier for terrorists overseas. And the first people who are going to feel that damage are our soldiers in Afghanistan. We need to understand that. This is serious and it's real, as well as empowering Chinese.
That was the same exact argument, by the way, made on Bradley Manning, which never actually really quite panned out.
Right.
Oops.
Russian intelligence officials. I think it's important that he comes back, brings what he has left, and if he really truly believes he did something good, quote unquote, then come back to the United States. He missed every opportunity to be a whistleblower when he missed every opportunity to talk to a whole host of avenues for him.
But
to,
is there,
to,
is,
you know, like all those other whistleblowers that you've heard absolutely nothing about because they went through the official channels. He should have done that.
Is it realistic? Do you think that we can compel him to come back?
I'm not sure. I think he may be too far gone. I would hope at the end of the day he makes that decision. We know that he certainly, the Russian intelligence services would love to have further conversations with him.
I love these inferences. I love these inferences. You know, he's prepared. You know, essentially what Rogers and Feinstein have both just insinuated is that he's going to hand over information to the Chinese or the Russians. Maybe, maybe. But so far, that doesn't seem to have been the case, all other than what he's just released to the public.
We think he's already had some disclosure to the Chinese intelligence officials. So there's a lot more to this story, a lot to be concerned about. I would like him to come back as well and bring what he has stolen from the people of the United States.
Oh, bring what he has stolen from.
What,
do you feel stolen from a little bit, Chase? Do you feel like you were robbed? Because I'll tell you what feels.
I was so close to laying out.
You know
what
feels like it's been robbed? My rights! My rights have been robbed, Chase. That's what's been robbed.
My
flipping freedom.
Right. That's what's been robbed.
Jesus.
Now, Feinstein went on to say in her interview with Candy that actually, it turns out he took more than she could have ever possibly imagined, and it's very serious.
Here's what this man did. By his own admission, he came to Booz Allen to be a contractor with
by this
the
man,
purpose.
You mean Snowden. Okay,
I meant Snowden, yeah. Yes. With the purpose of going in there and taking as much material as he possibly could. He took much more than I could possibly think he could. It's very sensitive data. And then he went and strategically placed it so that it could come out at different times. Then he went to two big cyber intruding powers.
I want to back this up because I think what... So Dianne Feinstein, one of the things I've noticed by watching her for a couple of years is she is very connected to the Obama administration. She gets directly what the new talking points are. And then Dianne, because of her... she's not even that great of a speaker, but when she sits on a set, she sort of... You have the feeling that Dianne owns that room and that everyone is talking to her because Dianne is allowing this to happen.
Right.
And so Dianne is very good. She has a very good on-screen commanding presence, even though she's in her 80s. And she's still very – she very much owns the room. And so she gets these talking points early on. Now, listen to this because I believe what the words that are about to come out – now, there might be more refined later on. But she's about to very eloquently state, which I believe will be the new – counterpoint against Edward Snowden, which you will hear repeated as a talking point from all of the talking heads for months forward, beginning today. Listen to what she's going to say. It's the key to all of it.
Went to two big cyber intruding powers. Strategically placed it so that it could possibly think he could.
So she's about to say he strategically placed it, like he was giving forethought to all of this. It was all part of a master evil plan.
It's very sensitive data. And then he went and strategically placed it so that it could come out at different times. Then he went to two big cyber intruding powers, China and Russia, and left China and went to Russia. You've got to ask, why did he choose those two? You've got to also ask, do the Chinese have all this material? Do the Russians have
it? Do we know?
We don't know.
Okay.
So it's a very serious situation.
It's a very serious situation.
You know,
and it's funny how Mike Rogers being a Republican in the House, Dianne Feinstein being a Democrat in the Senate, yet they both kind of just said the same thing, almost like they're reading the same exact talking points being controlled by exactly the same people.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that. And on top of that, what we're not talking about here is the blatant violations of our Constitution.
No.
We're not talking about the perjury that was, that
happened
was
during the Congress hearings.
We're not talking about that. We're not talking
the
about
the waste of taxpayers' dollars.
Absolutely.
The egregious waste of taxpayer dollars.
Yeah,
you might
I mean,
say.
We're not talking about that.
Nope.
What they're doing is they're following the old script of trying to paint this guy into a evil person for releasing things that our government are doing that they're doing against us.
Yep.
Because they are doing it against us, you guys.
Right. They can't argue that part.
No, they can't. And so therefore, what happens when a dog is hurt and is hurt and not feeling well and feels threatened? What do? They start biting and fighting back and trying to hurt you. Yeah. And what they're trying to do to us is paint this guy, Edward Snowden, into a vicious, terroristic kind of guy.
You got Mike and Dianne out on the Sunday shows painting him as a villain. You got Obama out there pivoting to the economy.
Oh, we're not going to scramble jets for this guy, though.
Right. Let's not get distracted by fake controversies. Let's focus on the economy and the middle class. And by the way, the only reason we can do that is because we have completely trashed the middle class. We have completely destroyed the economy after the last 30 years. And now what we get to do, as the bastards who have destroyed your future and destroyed your wealth, what we get to do is trumpet this up as our pretend issue that we care about to distract you from the important things. Whenever we feel like it's time to distract you, and when it's not time to distract you, we pull it back down. And it's this wonderful carrot we get to just smack you in the face with whenever we want to. And hey, everybody, look over here, because Barry wants you to care about the damn economy.
Hello, everybody.
That's what he's doing now.
Yep.
And you know what? The worst part is, it's legitimately an issue. Because they have effed it all up.
Yeah, it is a legit issue. But, you know, one thing that's been totally not covered, well, it's been covered briefly, but, you know, you got to love the news cycle. Whatever happened to the IRS targeting conservative groups? Whatever
it's
happened
kind
to
of
that?
Petered out a bit.
It's petered out, but it happened. And what's the result? Nothing. nothing. And you know, and that's the end game here that I'm afraid of, is the end result after all is said and done. Everyone's going to go out to their lives and nothing's going to
happen.
That
is the big concern. I don't know if that, I mean, I think that's what they want to happen, and that's what they're trying to make happen. That's trying to what's trying to appear to what's happening.
It's been the same script over and over and over.
You've had the vote. You had the recent Congress vote. Now, of course, Congress did reject the vote that would have sort of defanged the NSA spy, and we sort of mentioned it was going to be happening last week.
The U.S. House of Representatives has narrowly rejected an amendment to a bill that would have restricted the National Security Agency's ability to collect data on American phone records. The program's details were made public several weeks ago by Edward Snowden, a former contractor for America's electronic spying agency. President Obama and the NSA's chief had lobbied strongly against the amendment. Katie Watson reports now from Washington.
Yeas are 205 and the nays are 217. The amendment is not adopted.
Blah. It was a brief but passionate debate, a chance for lawmakers to air their feelings on U.S. secrets.
And this amendment, by the way, it wasn't actually going to disable and defang the NSA so much as just make it so that they could only monitor people they had a warrant for. And that's what failed.
Valence. For the man who introduced the legislation, his message was clear.
Opponents of this amendment will use the same tactic that every government throughout history has used to justify its violation of rights. Fear. They'll tell you that the government must violate the rights of the American people to protect us against those who hate our freedoms.
This wasn't the typical Democrat-Republican debate usually seen in Washington. The vote saw unusual political coalitions.
And this is the part that gives me hope.
It came down to priorities of civil liberties and national security. Even one of President Obama's fiercest critics backed the administration, urging a vote against the amendment.
The only people who have benefited from the revelation of classified information.
This is how you know we're really screwed, is when you got Bachman, who's arguing for the Obama administration's position.
By someone who worked for this government, who intentionally and unauthorized declassified some of the most sensitive national security information that we have. The only result is that those who are engaged in Islamic jihad will have been benefited.
I feel stupider having heard that. I literally feel like a dumber person having had that enter my eardrum.
Remember, she ran for president.
Unfreaking believable.
I'm just saying.
So there you go. The vote passed, but actually fairly narrow. It failed fairly narrowly across party lines. And I feel like this is the beginning. See, we as primates, as monkeys that came from the jungle and then somehow figured out how to build wooden box and put fancy shinies inside of them, we have a hard time thinking about things in the big picture. But I will tell you this. The fact that we are having these conversations, the fact that there's a podcast out there talking about this, the fact that there was even a vote, the fact that there's pressure, the fact that they're backed up against the wall going out there and saying all these ridiculous things, all of this is a good sign, and all of this is a momentum building towards resolution, and it will take way longer than any of us want, and it will be the burden that this generation has to suffer. Yeah. But it will be the burden that this generation has to suffer, and I believe the future generations won't. I'm hopeful, and yeah. I believe right now, very, very, very early stages of that process have begun.
Yep. I couldn't agree with you more.
All right, Mr. Chase, should we get to the email before we get
out
of here?
Yeah, remember, you can email us unfiltered show at Jupiter.
I made it easy.
You can also phone us a voicemail, 425-212-1756.
Hey, oh.
But we do have written correspondence. The first one came in from James. He said, "Hey, Chris. Hey, Chase. Congratulations on the little one, Chris. I hope the new kiddo is healthy and that Angela's recovering well.
They are.
I have one, and I can't imagine going beyond that in terms of maintaining a career, a marriage, and even friendships.
Neither can I.
So here it is. The last 2 months have made me more cynical about the state of our federal and state governments than ever before. I don't want to write a long dissertation about why I think what I think. I just want to say that in regards to surveillance, the feds are going to do what they want to do. They will say that in that act first and then legalize it later. As long as we're always messing with the hornet's nests in other countries, the need to protect us from terrorism will never cease. Thus, the need for the surveillance state will never go away."
He's right.
"In regards to the banking industry, they're going to keep they're going to do what they tell the federal government to do. Goldman Sachs can keep jogging aluminum around their factories and distorting prices because Well, they can.
They are Goldman Sachs, after all.
Yes, I think the federal government is too large, too powerful, and controlled too much by money. The nanites of the wealthy have assimilated the federal government, and they're doing it in large states, too. The wealthy can live the life they want to because they can afford it. They can afford to not care about a multiplicity of issues, but instead the one issue that makes them money because the other issues don't matter to them. Mm. Why would I give two shits about making abortion services more difficult if I have no interest in it? Banking issues? Hell, the banking industry helps me keep my money. Surveillance state? It helps keep the economy under control so that dickheads don't fly into my corporate offices.
That's really what it's about, right?
Yeah, it's true. Not just that, the federal government is far away to be held accountable, too cushy with the national media to help control the conversation.
Very true, too.
The only thing that can happen to give them to give even a glimmer of hope is to change who we send to Washington. But here's the catch. The corrupt banking industry and Big Brother are not the main issues that get people elected. It's the overgeneralized stuff like abortion, taxes, and guns that get people elected on top of a whole list of them.
Amen to that, brother.
Sorry if I went too long, but I just think we have to consider the long game of changing our minds down the road and maybe changing minds within our state government.
Yep.
Your local and state officials are more likely to listen than any schmuck who works in Washington, D.C.
Amen to that.
Also, I'm still investing since day one, and I use the Amazon plugins. Thanks for listening.
Well, thanks to you. So how great is that email? I mean, totally just sums up where we're at. And it's funny because it, in some ways, also, he's laid out our path to salvation.
Yeah.
It is through the local channels. And how do you get to that? Well, the way you get to that is through information. And this is why I'm excited, and Chase, I think you should be excited too, as a new media creator, is what our competitive advantage is we are not destroyed by this system, by this crony system. We are not affected by it. And so, therefore, we are the replacement. When you have something like... when you have multiple products on the market, it takes something that is substantially better to replace the old product. It is the nature of how markets work, and that's what's so great about new media. That's what's so exciting about new media is that we are better in a very fundamental, organic way. It is infused into how the very structure of our show is set up.
Right.
We are not susceptible to the same flaws that they're susceptible to.
However, the only way that we can continue and do this is through the generous contributions of supporters, because obviously the way our society works, unfortunately or fortunately, we're not in the Star Trek universe yet, is by money.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
we need to survive. We need to do those things.
That is pretty much the only question. Is this show too ahead of its time, where there is not enough people that have recognized this situation and are willing to take a stance to actually affect change? And may just be too early.
Well, some brilliant minds, and even companies for that matter, have had products and ideas way ahead of their time, and then make fun of them. I mean, I know make fun for what you will, but you know, Bill Gates came out with tablet computing. And
Apple computer was started in Wozniak's garage.
Right. And, you know, Microsoft, you know, Bill Gates was like, all right, here's a tablet computer. The interface sucked. It never caught on.
Right.
But then just a few short years later, Apple comes out with the iPad.
Right.
So,
well, look at Linus Torvalds. Linus Torvalds created an operating system called Linux that he wanted to use as his personal operating system. And he said, oh, I don't think it'll ever support anything but an IDE disk. You know, it's just going to be the small time fun thing.
It's going to be very lightweight.
Right. And it changed the world.
Yeah.
It changed the world.
So, you know, maybe we are ahead of our time. Only time will tell on that. Our last email that we got in this week, this came in from Tim via Bit Message.
Hey, Hope.
Yes. Hey, Chris. Hey, Chase. I'm a fan of the show, and I very much appreciate all and afford all the guys that you put into it. Keep on doing this, please. It gives me great insights to the U.S. news landscape. There is more and more information leaking out about PRISM and surveillance of people around the globe in general. Over the last couple of weeks, I've read a lot about the matter and demonstrated in the streets of Berlin against global unlawful surveillance.
That was a clip that almost made it. Yeah, there's been some great demonstrations going on.
I also sent out a long email to about 20 of my friends asking from mine, explaining the matter in depth and also explaining what steps possibly to take. Take it to the street, encrypt email and alike, and use open source software. Just continue using Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, etc. I only got 5 responses to my astonishment and disappointment.
Yeah.
Out of those 5, there was a friend which I had lots of conversations with, but he still does not see the point in encrypting his email.
Mm.
He has nothing to hide, you know.
Oh, right, of course.
Another one found it all too complicated. Another one is way too busy to bother, she says. So my question is, do you guys have any ideas on how to approach people with this matter? What are your experiences regarding this? Any tips? I would hate if this becomes some sort of elite thing where only a few people know how to use encryption properly and are also aware of the implications this whole matter has on our society. Cheers right. from Germany, Tim.
This is a little idea we've experimented with where maybe they'll become a digital elite of people who actually have privacy and protection because they know how to use these tools, and the people who don't will sort of become victims to the machine.
Chris.
Yeah.
You know, dare I say this, but maybe this is a way for Unfilter to start our new Unfilter consulting and security firm. And what we do, Chris, is we go out to person to person out there. Not only we infect them and educate them.
We'll explain to them the situation.
We'll explain to them, and we will offer to help them and assist them by encrypting their emails and locking down their networks.
I guess maybe you could Tim, if you want to, send them a link to our show. I don't know if it is worth your time and your energy, good sir, to convince those who do not want to be
and
convinced.
And only for the low price of $995.95.
Yeah, that's something we should jump on.
What we could do, Chris,
do this.
Is, you know, I mean, just look at our little city here. You know, there's 50,000 people, no doubt,
you have no idea.
I joke, but there's some truth in there.
I made money for years. What I would do is a sales guy would call a company.
Hi.
And he would say, hi, we'd like to send in our network engineer to audit your network and provide you with a full report of your security situation.
Absolutely free. It will not cost you a thing.
And then Chris Fisher would come in and scan their whole network and find every single vulnerability. And then it was never quite said to me.
You have port 80 open.
Right. My job was to make the scariest, most complicated and detailed report telling them of all of their vulnerabilities and how we could fix them.
But Chris,
I've done this job, Chase.
I know.
We could do it.
All you got to do is remember, fear sells.
We can, dude, I'm telling you, the Unfilter Consulting Group is here to make money right now, right?
No. Right the today. Unfilter Security Consulting Group.
Right. No, we got to put cyber in the name.
Oh, cyber.
Cybersecurity.
Anti-terrorism group.
Cyber terrorism. Anti-cybersecurity and cyber terrorism for cyber protection and cyber enhancement group.
Because
of cyber.
We're here to lock it down for you. Of cyber lockdowns.
Yeah. Tim, I don't know, man. I don't know if it's worth wasting all of your time and energy. You can do what you can do, but people have to come to some of these realizations on their own because it requires challenging some fundamental assumptions I think a lot of people have. And when you ask a person to do that, that requires a lot of internal processes on their part to take place.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
Chase, what do you think? You think maybe it's about time for us to wrap up the Unfiltered
Show? I think so. You know, about this time at the end of the show, we'd like to go back and we'd like to review who has joined our awesome
community. How is that subreddit doing, Chase?
At unfiltered.reddit.com.
Unfiltered.reddit.com.
And, Chris, what was my prediction for last week?
I'm perusing through the Red Book right now. So, last week... Oh, what's this here?
Yeah. Yeah, what was
wow, look at this. And Unfiltered 52, Mike Rogers, center of next big controversy. Who do we play clips from today?
Mike Rogers.
Nailed that one.
Yeah, you nailed it. All right, come on,
sorry. Unfiltered, you said...
How many last week? Come on, hurry up.
570. No, I'm sorry, 615. You said 615.
Ooh, well, we didn't quite make that goal. We made 606 this week.
Wow, way to go, guys. Make us look bad.
But you know what?
I'm feeling bad now, Chase. I feel bad.
You know what? We could still make it for next week. Come on, you guys.
What do you want to do, 615 next week?
615, we're going to keep it steady. 615.
All right, I'm putting in the red book next week.
Now, Chris, during the course of the week, you know you tweet your thoughts and your...
Twitter.com/ChrisLAS.
That's simple. That's easy. It's 140 characters or less.
Wisdom in 140 characters. What about you, Mr. Chase? Are you on that Twitter?
I am on the Twitter. So if you head over to ChaseNunes.com, there you can find a link to my Twitter. Remember, if you don't, you can't. And if you do, you can.
Oh, okay. Good to know. All right. Good to know.
Yes. Also, I do geeking and gaming topics over there at geekgamer.tv. We just had a great episode of Geek Gamer Weekly where we talked about French toast sandwich.
Nice.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chromecast jelly bean.
That may be a little more relevant.
Yeah, a little bit more relevant.
I want to remind you, if you're an Unfiltered supporter, go check your inbox. You've got the newsletter and you've got the supporter show, which right now is clonking in at a monstrous 2 hours and 26 minutes.
God, that's massive.
That's a lot of show.
That's a lot of show.
That's worth supporting. That's worth becoming a supporter right there.
That's something to easily digest in 2 1-hour increments.
I want to remind folks that Unfiltered is live Wednesdays at 6 p.m. over at jblive.tv. That's Pacific time, but you can go to JupiterBroadcasting.com/calendar to get the details.
And remember, guys, we will see you right back here next week.